into the House wing of the Capitol. Barricades have been placed in the corridors leading to the House side of the building and at the entrances and exits of the House wing. Guards have orders to permit no one to pass unless he has special credentials. Special passes will be required even of all news and radio reporters and employees of the House. The Metropolitan Police Department will send 175 men to the Capitol at noon to augment the 150 members of the Special Capitol Police. In addition, the usual elaborate Secret Service detail that accompanies the president will be present. Trouble is reported to have broken out in Romania. A Bucharest radio announcement picked up in Hungary says Romanian Premier Călinescu has been assassinated. Telephone connections between Budapest and Bucharest have been cut. There is no further direct information, but here in Washington, the Romanian legation has an unconfirmed report that two or more of the premier's assistants also were killed. The legation understands, but this is also unofficial, that the assassins were members of the outlawed fascist Iron Guard. This is a group with German sympathies. Meanwhile, the Western Front is quiet, but there's furious activity behind the lines. Britain, France, and Germany are moving up men and materials for a long and grueling siege. France announces that her general mobilization is complete. 6 million well-drilled men are now under arms, either at concentration points or at battle stations. This vast army is being steadily increased by British arrivals. British artillery already is at the front. British and French warplanes dot the landscape with every level pasture and airdrome. In the no-man's land between advance lines, cautious feeler operations are underway. The French report local activity plus artillery action on both sides. And on the other side of the Rhine, a westward migration of German troops, tanks, and warplanes is being speeded. The Germans say Poland's army has been destroyed, and Nazi troops are being shifted to the west. The Allies are worried by rumors of Nazi military preparations in the Aix-la-Chapelle district, near Belgium and the Netherlands. They apparently fear that a Nazi thrust through these neutral nations may be made. But in Berlin, German propaganda minister Goebbels indignantly denies this as a, quote, British lie, unquote. Goebbels insists the Reich never has had any intention to violate Dutch and Belgian neutrality. Goebbels also denies British reports of an uprising in what used to be Czechoslovakia. London stands behind its story, but Czech sources say the rebellion is dying down, although there still is trouble in some rural areas. On the high seas, German submarines have struck again. The freighter Kensington Court has been sunk. Its crew of 34 was rescued by British Royal Air Force planes. The British failed to get the undersea raider, but there are indications that the British did attack a submarine off Dover. Some believe that the heavy firing heard in the Straits of Kattegat off Denmark yesterday may have been a British attack on Nazi submarines, but this is wholly unofficial. Poland's position becomes increasingly precarious, but Polish troops are still holding out. Warsaw radio reports that the capital's defenders have counterattacked, advancing 2 miles in the suburbs. The Germans admit the Poles are still fighting at Warsaw and at Lemberg or Lwów in the south. Russia, however, claims Lwów has fallen to the Soviet army, as well as Grodno in the north. Capture of Grodno sent thousands of Polish refugees streaming into Lithuania. The Russian press now admits that the Soviet advance has been fiercely resisted at points. Moscow newspapers pay tribute to what they describe as unheard of and previously unwitnessed massed heroism by the Red Army. Fortune magazine announced today that it had conducted a survey which indicated that almost two-thirds of the United States is opposed to strict isolation. The survey showed, the magazine said, that 83.1% of those surveyed want England, France, and Poland to win the war, but that 64.8% think they can win. Only 24.7% favored a complete embargo against the belligerents. The Retailers National Council said today that rapid increases in food costs would impair the nation's purchasing power. Secretary of Labor Perkins revealed that the average cost of foodstuffs increased as much as 2% during the week ending September 19th. The Agricultural Advisory Council issued a statement contending that the public need have no fear of food shortages or runaway prices as a result of the European war. It pledged its fullest cooperation in meeting problems created by the conflict. Roscoe R. Rao, president of the Retailers' Council, an organization comprising 11 associations that represent more than 200,000 retail stores, said the nation's economic structure would be impaired by skyrocketing prices. The council was ready, he said, to offer its services in coordination of retailers in their efforts to safeguard the public interest. Stocks rallied on the New York Exchange today after a narrowly irregular opening. Most issues had small gains around noon. Railroad equipments were strong. Trading picked up immediately afternoon, volume increased, and the whole market developed strength. How do you keep these always hungry youngsters of yours satisfied, Mother? Especially after school, when their appetites are so keen and they say, "Gee, Mom, can I have something to eat?" Well, here's a good way. Sunshine Crispy Crackers, spread with peanut butter and a glass of milk. It's delicious, as well as a nourishing combination. Children rush home from school for these old favorites. You know, children are as quick as grown-ups, yes, even quicker sometimes, to recognize the difference in crackers. They like the extra crispness and extra flavor of Sunshine Crispy, K-R-I-S-P-Y, Sunshine Crispy Crackers. They seem to know that crispy crackers make jams, jellies, peanut butter, and milk taste better. Buy some of these spreads and a package of Sunshine Crispy Crackers at your grocer's tomorrow. Your children will love them. A recording covering a full day of broadcasting at station WJSV is going to be placed in the files of the National Archives. The special recording is being made today, and this program to which you are now listening is now being recorded and preserved for posterity. The full day's activities from the opening station announcement at 6 o'clock this morning until 1 a.m., when the Star Spangled Banner is played, will be recorded. Today was chosen for the record because history will be made in the United States this afternoon. The recording will include the opening of the extra session of Congress and President Roosevelt's speech to that body. Arrangements are also being made to include a speech by Premier Daladier, direct from France, in case President Roosevelt's speech is finished on time. The District of Columbia commissioners are scheduled to end hearings on the 1941 budget today. They'll hear the testimony of several local officials before attacking the problem of how to cut $13 million from the requests of the department directors. The heads of the departments have requested approximately $63 million, which is $13 million more than was provided in this year's budget. Officials are looking forward to an early settlement of the district truck driver strike. Howard Colvin, Department of Labor conciliator, said today that he expected definite developments sometime this afternoon. The drivers have been on strike over a week for higher wages. Dean Noble Powell of Washington Cathedral has not yet decided whether to become Bishop of Louisiana. Yesterday, Episcopalians met in New Orleans and elected him to the bishopric of that state. Today, he had not made up his mind whether to accept or decline. Last May, he rejected a similar offer on the grounds that he had work to complete at Washington, where he is warden of the College of Preachers. The Children's Hospital drive for funds is not reaching expectations. Miss Mattie Gibson, superintendent of the hospital, reported today that the drive has reached only one-third of the amount needed to erase a $27,000 deficit. Officials said that they hope to raise several thousand dollars from the presentation of two operas at Constitution Hall on October the 2nd and 3rd. Residents of Fairfax County, Virginia, are continuing their campaign to raise funds to buy the Arlington and Fairfax Auto Railroad. The Fairfax Commuters League has already raised $3,000 toward the purchase of the abandoned railroad. Officials said that $22,000 would be needed to buy the line's property between Fairfax Courthouse and Falls Church. Another $55,000 would be needed to extend the service to Lacey, where bus connections for Washington would be made. The grade crossing at Landover, Maryland, the scene of Maryland's latest grade crossing death, will soon be replaced. Nathan L. Smith, chief engineer of the State Road Commission, has announced that plans for the bridge, which will replace the crossing, have already been completed. State officials are now taking steps to purchase land for the construction of the overpass. The latest crossing victim was James McCarron of the 3200 block of 12th Street Northeast. McCarron, the father of five children, was killed when his automobile crashed into a freight train yesterday. The Queen of the President's Cup Regatta will receive her crown tomorrow night in impressive coronation ceremonies at Haynes Point. Miss Ruth Overton, daughter of Senator John Overton, will be crowned Queen of the Water event by Edward Noble, Undersecretary of Commerce. A Coast Guard cutter will carry Miss Overton to the scene of the coronation. After she receives her crown, the new queen will review a colorful parade of boats and canoes. The climax of the ceremonies will come when a fireworks display is set off. The three-day cup regatta will get underway tomorrow morning when the outboard motor races take place. The American Automobile Association is going to hold its next annual meeting in Washington. It was announced today that the association would meet on November 16th and 17th with about 500 delegates attending. Mr. Russell Singer of Washington, D.C. is secretary of the association. Soldiers of yesterday are coming to the aid of soldiers of today. The American Legion announces that its members in Washington will assist the Red Cross in its annual drive for funds. Part of the money raised will be used to aid victims of the European War. Legionnaires have organized a separate roll call division and will solicit Red Cross memberships from small downtown stores. The special unit group of the Community Chest is stealing a march on other chest workers. This group of volunteers has already held its organization meeting and is ready to go to work soliciting in its particular field. Here's the weather forecast for the district and vicinity. Fair tonight and Friday. Cooler with lowest temperature about 54 degrees tonight. Slowly rising temperature Friday. Our farewell piece this afternoon concerns the ladies, bless 'em. The ladies, it seems, threaten to get the nation war-conscious if they don't watch out. At least, that's what the Chicago and Illinois Hairdressers Association says. The association's convention in Chicago yesterday adopted this resolution. We believe feminine fashions should be designed on the principle of beauty and enchantment, not as a means of propaganda to make women war-conscious. We urge all hairdressers throughout the country to oppose war motifs and to ask cooperation of their patrons in refusing to wear clothes which in any way indicate a wartime fashion trend.
Don't miss the highlights of the news in Washington and vicinity as reported by Hugh Conover, your Sunshine reporter, and brought to you every afternoon, Monday through Saturday at 1 p.m. by Loose Wires Biscuit Company, bakers of those famous crispy crackers and the new Sunshine Graham crackers that are enriched with healthful vitamins and minerals. This is Columbia Station for the nation's capital. Here is a transcribed announcement.
Here's the inside on the 1940 cars.
Best Bets Buick.
Your nearest Buick dealer is waiting to tell you all about it.
WJSV, Washington.
The life and love of Dr. Susan. This story of an attractive young woman doctor who is trying to make life worthwhile for herself and her two young children is presented by the makers of Lux Toilet Soap. One of the hardest things in the world to decide is just what makes a woman attractive. Everybody has a different idea. Some men prefer red-headed girls, and some men like brunettes with curls. Some men like them small, other men like 'em tall, and some say a blonde is the sweetest of all. Some men say it's blue eyes that win. Some men like a soft dimpled chin. But between you and me, every man will agree that he can't resist beautiful skin. There's no doubt about the fact that every man admires a woman with soft, smooth skin. And that's why it's so important for a woman to be sure she's giving her skin the right care. With Lux Toilet Soap, you can be sure you're doing that. Lux Toilet Soap has active lather that removes all dirt and dust and stale cosmetics. It helps you keep your skin soft and smooth the way it ought to be. And that's important. Use cosmetics all you like, but give your skin the protection of perfect cleansing with active lather. Why don't you start in tonight using the soap 9 out of 10 screen stars use, the gentle soap that helps you keep your skin soft and smooth, Lux Toilet Soap. And now for the story of Dr. Susan. Yesterday, Dr. Susan Chandler heard from her 16-year-old cousin Nancy that Butch Bixby, the famous pitcher whose arm Susan had cured, has lost his nerve and is refusing to pitch in the big exhibition game. Nancy finally confessed that this was because Butch believed that Annabelle Waite, daughter of wealthy Joshua Waite, mayor of Valleydale, didn't ever want to see Butch again. Susan discovered that this belief was due to a lie cooked up by Annabelle's mother. Upon discovering the true state of affairs, Susan went immediately to the Waite house to talk to Annabelle. She pointed out that Annabelle was the only person in the world who could cure Butch's inferiority complex. As a result, Annabelle took her courage in both hands and decided to go to Butch and tell him she loved him. It is now late afternoon of the next day. Susan, her 12-year-old son Dick, and Skitty Van Rickenbacker, Nancy's fiancé, are sitting on the front steps waiting for a telegram telling them the results of the big exhibition ball game. They are shelling peas.
Oh, dear. I hope Mr. Blodger doesn't forget to wire us what happened. That game was scheduled to start at 2 o'clock. Must have been over nearly 2 hours ago.
Maybe they went into extra innings, eh, Skitty?
Well, they might have.
I hope not. Butch's first game in such a long time. Those extra inning games are terribly hard.
Maybe he was taken out. Maybe he didn't pitch at all like Mr. Blodgett was afraid of.
Oh, of course he pitched. Annabelle made him, I hope. Oh, goodness, Dickie, don't be so pessimistic.
Yeah, well, if everything is all right, why don't we get a letter from Mr. Blodgett?
Sure, I don't know. Oh, dear, I put the last batch of peas in with the pods.
Never mind, Dr. Susan, I'll pick them up.
Oh, thanks, Kitty. Goodness, now I've upset the paper bag. I'm as nervous and jumpy as a hen on a griddle.
Well, you're not the only one, Dr. Susan. When I speak to Nancy lately, either she doesn't hear me or she bursts into tears. I can't make out what's the matter with her.
Oh, just remember, Skitty, Nancy's only 16. Girls that age very often have, moods. Besides, we're so anxious for Butch to be able to pitch again, we're all pretty upset and absent-minded.
Well, I hope that's what it is. I wouldn't want to think Nancy had, changed her mind about me.
Oh, all women are nuts.
Don't you believe it. Your mother's one of the sanest people I've ever known.
Thanks for the compliment, and hand me some more pots.
Sure. And your grandmother's no slouch either, Dick.
Yeah, but Nancy and Marilyn, phooey. Hey, Mom.
Yes, Dickie?
Can't you do something to keep her from tagging after me all the time? Marilyn, I mean. She's getting to be an awful nuisance.
Oh? I always thought you and Marilyn were so congenial, Dickie. Think of all the good times you've had together.
Yeah, but that was when we were kids. Now that I've took to running around with the gang, well, gee whiz.
Is running around with a gang so much more important than playing with your own sister?
That's not the point. There comes a time in every fella's life when girls are superfluous.
But I expect Marilyn's pretty lonely. Don't you think you could find some way to find time to play with her? Just now and then?
Aw, gee whiz, Mom.
Uh-oh. Look who's coming up the street.
Oh, my goodness, Mrs. Waite. Still looking like a thundercloud.
Want I should make a face at her, huh, Mom?
Certainly not, Dick. Let's all be awfully busy and pretend we don't see her.
Yes, and then she won't have a chance to snub us.
It's no use, Mom. She's turning in here.
Goodness, what do you suppose has happened now? Hello, Mrs. Waite. Isn't it a beautiful day? Come on up and sit down.
I intend to come up, but I won't sit down. This is the last time I'll accept any Chandler hospitality ever.
Why, Isabel Waite.
I just came over to tell you I've received a telegram from Annarelle.
Was it good news?
No. She married that wretched ball player this afternoon, the minute the game was over. Mr. Blodgett was best man.
Oh, no wonder we haven't heard from him. He was probably so excited he forgot all about telegraphs.
Oh, this is no joking matter. Annabelle's life is ruined, and it's all your fault, Susan Chandler.
Never mind the details. Did Butch play? Was his arm okay?
I suppose so. Annabelle said he pitched a shutout, whatever that means.
Whoopee!
It means he's terrific. You should be very proud of your new son-in-law, Mrs. Waite.
Proud? Oh, if he ever dares show his face in this town again, I'll slap it.
Oh, you're so bitter. Annabelle's your only child. How can you begrudge her happiness?
She was my child, you mean. She doesn't belong to me anymore. I have nothing more to do with her. You saw to that. You, well, let me tell you, Susan Chandler, you're going to regret sending Annabelle off last night. I'm going to see to that if it takes the rest of my life.
Isabel, please. You're only hurting yourself. It's bad for you. Go home and lie down. You'll feel differently about things after you've had a good night's sleep.
You don't think I can do anything to hurt you, do you?
No, we don't. So there.
Dickie.
And that reminds me, you, Richard.
Who, me?
Yes, you. There's a vacant lot opposite the school where you boys play, I believe.
Sure. That's where me and the rest of the Valleydale Comets practice baseball and football.
Not anymore, you don't. That vacant lot belongs to me. If any one of you so much as sets foot on it, I'll have you arrested for trespassing.
Yeah, but gee whiz, there isn't any other lot big enough for baseball. That means we couldn't play anymore.
Yes, that's too bad, isn't it? And when you break the news to your friends, tell them they have Dr. Susan Chandler to thank for being put off of the property.
Isabel, you can't. That's so unfair. Dickie's done nothing to hurt you.
No, but he's your son. I'm going to make you pay for what you've done to my daughter. Goodbye, Susan Chandler. And remember, this is just the beginning.
The old hatchet face. I'd like to kick her teeth in.
Dickie, don't. She'll hear you.
Suppose she does. Gee whiz, Mom. Now look what you've done. Do you have to go and get mixed up with that old battle axe?
I knew she was mad at me. But I never thought she'd take it out on the children. I suddenly feel kind of cold. There's not much warmth from the sun anymore, is there? Dickie, will you run upstairs and get me a sweater?
No, get your own sweater.
Dick.
Well, I gotta go over and tell Bum and Tubby and the rest of the gang what's happened.
Mrs. Waite can't really do you any harm, can she, Susan? Even if she is the mayor's wife?
Well, I wouldn't have thought so a few minutes ago, Skitty. Now, I'm not so sure.
Why, Dr. Susan, you're shivering. Shall I go and get you that sweater?
No, thanks, Kitty. I think I'll just go inside.
Oh, excuse me, Cousin Susan. I'm just coming out.
Oh, that's all right, Nancy. Come along.
Oh, no, after you. You've got all those bags and balls and things. I'll hold the screen open.
Oh, thanks.
Has anybody heard anything from Butch?
Yes, he won the game.
Oh, did Cousin Susan say he lost the game?
No, he won it.
Well, my goodness, that's what she's been hoping for. She doesn't have to look so glum about it. Did anything else happen?
Yes. Butch and Annabelle got married right after the game.
Oh, I see.
You don't sound very excited about it.
Well, why should I?
Well, I just thought... Never mind. Skip it. Nancy.
Uh-huh?
You know, it seems sort of funny sitting home like this.
What do you mean, funny?
Well, usually when it gets to be fall, along about now, I'm all busy packing up and everything, getting ready to go back to college. It seems kind of funny to be sitting doing nothing.
But you wouldn't be going back to college anyway. I mean, even if you weren't here with us, you graduated last year.
Yes, I know, but I always thought I might go on and get an engineering degree. But of course, that's no good now. Now that we're getting married, I mean. It'd be sort of superfluous for a married man.
Well, you don't have to get married. Nobody's going to make you. Go ahead and break the engagement. Go ahead if that's what you want.
Nancy, I don't want to. I never said I did. I thought that's what you've been trying to do.
I have not. That's not true.
But for days you've been acting all queer and touchy, as if you didn't want to have me around anymore.
Oh, Skitty, I'm sorry. I know I've been perfectly horrid. I wouldn't blame you at all if you broke the engagement, but I don't want you to, honest.
Then you still love me, Nancy?
Oh, yes, I love you very, very much, only I've been sort of distracted lately. It's like, well, when fireworks go off in your face, you sort of forget how bright the sun is.
Huh? I guess I must be awfully dense, but I don't get it.
Never mind. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters except that we ought to get married. Quick, before anything else happens to distract us.
You mean before Christmas?
Oh, yes. Now, next week.
But I thought you wanted a big wedding with a veil and bridesmaids and everything.
No, if Annabelle can marry Butch without all that, well, so can I. I mean, the important thing is we love each other, isn't it?
Well, yes. I guess so. Sure.
You don't sound very convincing.
Well, gosh... I was just thinking we can't elope or anything like that.
Why not?
Well, you're underage.
I could lie about that.
No, sir. Marriage is a serious business. I'm not going to start it off like that. We've got to get Dr. Howard's consent. He's your legal guardian, isn't he?
Oh, yes, but Cousin Susan's the one that counts. Uncle Howard will do anything she tells him to. Oh,
okay, then I'll have a talk with her.
When?
Well, how about tomorrow?
No, now, right away.
All right, Nancy, if you say so. Gee, and I thought you didn't want to get married anymore.
Well, I do, and you've got to make Susan let us.
Sure, leave it to me.
It won't be easy, Skitty. You have to be firm with her. Don't give her a chance to say no.
What will Susan say when Skitty tells her that he and Nancy want to get married right away? Listen in tomorrow at this same time and hear how Skitty has a change of mind and how Nancy's jealousy leads her to a bitter accusation. Today we're going to have a little musical geography. Some people live in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia. Some people live by the beautiful Ohio. And some people live underneath the Carolina moon. And still other people live in 10-10 Tennessee. And you know, it's a wonderful thing. No matter where you live, you can always buy Lux toilet soap. Wherever you are, this fine white soap with active lather is available to you. And because of this wide distribution and large sale, you can buy Lux toilet soap for only a few pennies. And that's important to every woman who wants to run her house beautifully and economically. Because Lux toilet soap is as fine a soap as money can buy. In it are only the finest ingredients. A cake of Lux toilet soap is solid and firm and long-lasting. You'll be proud to have luxurious white Lux toilet soap in your house. And don't forget, a few small pennies is all you have to give to get Lux soap, no matter where you live, whether you're in Troy or Butte or Cedarhurst. Get Lux soap today, that's September 21st. Why wait until September 22nd, 3rd, or 4th? Get Lux soap today, that's September 21st. The life and love of Dr. Susan comes to you with the good wishes of the makers of Lux Toilet Soap each day, Monday through Friday. Be with us tomorrow, won't you? And ladies, there's another dramatic treat in store for all of you tomorrow at 11:30 Eastern Daylight Time, 10:30 Central Time, when you can hear the famous serial Big Sister over most of these stations.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
1:30 Sanitary Food Store Time. Nothing could be more tasty and wholesome for school sandwiches than delicious Sanico ham. Get one today. Sanico ham save you time and money. Buy a Sanico ham today at your neighborhood sanitary food store. WJSV, Washington.
Seal Test presents the dramatic serial, Your Family and Mine. Are you coming to the New York World's Fair? Then don't forget to stop in at the Seal Test building for a glimpse of what Seal Test's scientific supervision of milk, ice cream, and other dairy products is doing to protect your family's health. Seal Test Incorporated and its member companies are under one common ownership. Ever since Woody Marshall returned from Paris, blind as a result of an airplane crash, Judy Wilbur has been devoting every waking hour to him. Steve Morgan, who had hoped to win Judy away from Woody, realizes now that Judy's strong sense of duty will compel her to remain loyal to Woody, even though Woody has insisted that she consider herself free. Now at the hospital, while Woody is undergoing the operation that may or may not restore his eyesight, we find Steve Morgan walking Judy around the hospital, trying to take her mind off what's happening to Woody.
Let's walk another block, Judy.
No, Steve. We better turn back.
Just another block.
I'd like to get back to the hospital, Steve. They've finished by now.
But even if they have, they're not going to let you see him right away.
Please, Steve. I'd like to go back anyway.
All right.
Thanks.
For what? Your mother asked me to take you for a walk, and I can't get you more than two blocks away from the hospital.
Steve, I haven't had a chance to say this before, but ever since Woody came back from Paris, you've been swell.
So I've been swell, have I? Because I had to accept what happened? Because I was forced to stifle the things that cried for words in me, and because I had to ignore the agony that was eating my heart away?
Steve, don't. Have you been doing any writing lately?
Not a line.
But you said...
I can't write. I never could.
That isn't true. Anybody who can turn out a short story like that first one you showed
that
me...
That was a freak. I had one story in me, and that's all.
That isn't true, and you know it.
Well, the way I feel these days, I wouldn't know the truth if it came up behind me and hit me with an axe.
Steve, when you let that old bitterness begin...
I'm sorry, Judy. You've got enough on your hands without my adding to it.
You have so much talent. You've got to do something with yourself.
Why?
Why? Because there are a lot of people who have faith in you. Even Woody thinks you're swell.
Does he?
You know he does. Shall we walk just a bit faster?
Sure, if you want to. But they're not going to let you see Woody for some time. They don't usually let visitors see patients right after they're brought down from the operating room, Judy.
Dr. Travis said he'd let me look at him just for a few moments.
He only said that to get you out of the hospital for a while.
Oh. Steve, what did Woody have to say to you? Why did he send for you before the operation?
Wasn't anything important.
What was it?
Nothing, Judy.
He said that if you didn't come on time, he'd ask them to delay the operation until you did come. It must have been important.
But it really wasn't.
All right. If you don't want to tell me.
Well, he said that you'd be needing someone to stand by you. He knows how I feel about you, and he wanted...
So that was it. He doesn't think the operation's going to succeed. In spite of that cheerful attitude, he feels it's hopeless.
No, not exactly. As a matter of fact, he told me that... Well, he had a feeling deep down that his sight might be saved.
The operation's going to be a success.
For more reasons than one.
What'd you say?
I said let's hope so.
What else did he say to you, Steve?
Oh, not much else that I can remember.
Did he say anything about our engagement?
Well, not exactly.
He did. He did say something, didn't he? He told you that if the operation failed, if it didn't restore his sight, he was going to break off the engagement. That he wasn't going to tie me down. He did say that, didn't he, Steve?
Well, he did say something of that sort.
As if I'd let him. Myself knowing that when he needed me the most, I'd turn my back on him.
Judy. Judy, what about... Well, what about your own happiness? What about your own right to a normal life?
I'll make my life with him normal. Other people have done it. I know it takes courage, but I'll have to find the courage.
But Judy, what about us?
We must forget about that.
I need you, Judy.
His need is greater.
I can't give you up.
You've got to forget about me.
Judy, I was just a hobo until I met you. You took me by the hand and showed me the way to a new life.
And you'll go on, Steve. You'll go on and find your happiness in that new life. You'll do important things. You'll write.
Without you, I won't be able to do a thing.
We'll have to learn, both of us, how to do without each other. Steve, he's blind. He's helpless.
He's only been blind a few weeks. I was blind all my life, Judy. Darling, listen, you can't let yourself get trapped this way. You've got a right to...
Stop it.
I need you and I love you. The two of us must forget about everyone and everything except ourselves and our own need for happiness.
If you don't mean that, you can't mean it.
Oh, you're right. Forget everything I said. I had no right to say things like that to you. Not now, anyway.
Oh, Steve.
If only he weren't the fine person he is, if I could only hate him. If only I could hate someone, if I didn't have to fight this nameless enemy that's so ruthless and without pity. Oh, all I can do now is hate myself.
You mustn't talk that way. Well, Steve, we're back at the hospital. Are you coming in with me?
Yes, I'm right with you.
What did the doctor say, Mums? When did they bring him down from the operating room?
About 10 minutes ago, Judy.
Did the doctor say anything? How'd the operation go?
Well, he said he thought it went rather well. So did Dr. Travers. But, of course, they have no way of knowing, not until they remove the bandages.
When will that be?
They didn't say, dear.
Can we go in, Mother?
As soon as the intern, who's in with him, says we can. He'll be out in a few minutes.
You better sit down, Judy.
No, I'm all right.
I couldn't get her to walk very far, Mrs. Wilbur.
I know, Steve. Thank you just the same. Mr. Marshall was here up to a few minutes ago. He said he'd be back soon. Oh, Doctor... Doctor, may we go in now?
Yes, but only for a few minutes.
We won't stay long.
Let's go, Mother.
I must warn you, he's still unconscious. You mustn't be alarmed by the things he's saying. He isn't aware of what he's saying.
We understand, Doctor. Thank you very much. You coming, Steve?
Yes, ma'am.
Mums.
Steady, Judy.
Mums, he looks so pale.
That's to be expected after what he's been through.
He's trying to say something.
Now, the intern warned us.
Judy,
he's calling me.
He doesn't know what he's saying. He's still under the anesthetic.
Judy, I can't see you. Judy, come over to the light. I've got to see you. Judy, you're standing in the dark.
Woody.
Darling, please.
Look out. Try to pull her out. She's going into a tailspin. Look out.
He's reliving that plane crash.
No. No, 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 don't say that. No, anything but that, no. Not my eyes, no.
This is horrible. He's suffering.
No, he isn't, Judy. He doesn't know what he's saying.
Not to be able to see again, I can't bear it.
It's all coming out now.
Judy.
All that grief that was in his heart, that he tried to hide from us, he can't hide it now.
We've got to get Judy out of here, Mrs. Wilby.
Judy.
Yes, I know. Judy, come with us, dear.
Blind. Blind, never again to see a plane, never again to look into people's faces.
Judy.
Judy.
Judy, you've got to come with us, dear.
Judy.
Judy, please.
No, no, not yet. I can't leave him.
But, darling, there's nothing you can do for him now.
Judy, where are you?
He's calling me, Mums.
No. No, I can't do it. Haven't I given up enough? Do I have to lose her, too?
Oh.
I love her. I won't give her up. I won't.
Mums, darling, the things he's saying.
Judy, please come with us.
Judy. No, Steve, no, please don't try to spare me. I've got to listen to all this. I've got to hear what he's saying.
Judy, where are you?
I'm here, Woody. I'm here, right here beside you.
Judy, darling.
Please come with us.
Steve. You and Mother go. I'm going to stay here.
Sorry. We're not going to leave you here, darling.
I can't go now, Mums.
We promised the intern that we wouldn't stay.
Oh, if only I could see her. If only I could see her face when she finds out that I'm blind. Is that too much to ask? The plane, she's going into a spin, the plane. I've got to look into her face. I've got to see what happens to her when she learns the truth.
Thank heaven they didn't see my face.
Judy, you're not going to leave me, are you? Oh, Judy, I'm not going to be a burden, I swear it. Cut the switch! Cut the switch, we're falling! Cut the switch! Judy, if you don't want to stay, I don't want to keep you. If it's only pity that holds you to me, then I don't want it. I can't bear the thought of you pitying me. No. No, Doctor, no. No. Judy, say you'll stay with me. Say you'll help me rebuild my life. Judy, talk to me. Judy, tell me you'll stay. Judy, where are you? Judy.
Oh, I'll stay, Woody. I'll be with you from now on. I'll never leave you.
Judy.
I'll never leave you.
And so we leave Judy Wilbur, promising to remain loyal to the unconscious Woody. What will happen in the grim days to come? Will Woody recover his sight? Will Judy keep her vow? Well, be sure to listen tomorrow. Now, what to serve for dessert tonight? What to serve that is delicious and different, that has novelty and originality? That's the question. And here's your seal test hostess, Mary Preston, with the answer.
And the answer that will fit all of those requirements is that grand new ice cream flavor which seal test created for September, Bananaroon ice cream.
Right you are, Mary. There's a dessert that will go down in history. For you see, folks, Bananaroon ice cream is really two flavors in one. It's mellow with the true flavor of ripe bananas and the deep almond flavor of crisp, oven-baked macaroons blended with rich cream and other choice ingredients.
Yes, Bananaroon ice cream certainly is delicious and different. A real flavor discovery, if there ever was one. And there's so many delightful ways of serving it, too. In homemade sundaes, for instance, with a luscious sauce. Or in a big, generous ice cream pie. Or for one of those extra special occasions, you can make some crisp, dainty meringues to serve with it.
And no matter how you serve it, you'll hear loud cheers from the family for this exciting new combination of luscious banana ice cream with golden flakes of crisp macaroon. You can buy this delightful new banana and macaroon ice cream from your nearest dealer who displays the seal test symbol.
And as for those inviting ice cream treats I just mentioned, well, just drop us a line for our booklet, Intriguing New Ways to Serve Ice Cream, and you'll find out how to make them all.
This beautiful illustrated booklet of ice cream treats is free to all of you. And for your free copy, just drop a line to the Seal Test Kitchen. That's Seal Test, spelled S-E-A-L-T-E-S-T. Seal Test Kitchen, 230 Park Avenue, New York. And now here's a message from your own community. Listen.
Chestnut Farms, Chevy Chase Milk, and Southern Dairy's Ice Cream are Seal Test approved. Now we'd like to add another recipe to Mary Preston's list. It's a recipe for the most delicious banana royal you'd ever want to taste. And it's simple as ABC. You merely stop at the nearest soda fountain serving Southern Dairy's ice cream and ask for their special banana royal. We promise you a treat you'll long remember. Imagine a cool, creamy round of that one and only Southern Dairy's banana ruin ice cream, ringed around with sweet, ripe bananas and crowned with chocolate sauce and fluffy whipped cream. Delicious doesn't half describe it. Next time you pass a Southern Dairy's soda fountain, don't pass it. Stop and treat yourself to one of those perfectly grand banana royals.
Tomorrow, Woody recovers consciousness, and the terrible uncertainty that lies before him forces Woody to a new decision about Judy. Be sure to listen for another gripping chapter in the dramatic story of the Wilbers of High Falls. Until then, this is Ford Bond signing off for your family and mine.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
We wish to thank the sponsors of Scattergood Baines and the Career of Alice Blair for relinquishing their time in order that you may hear the following special broadcast. The Career of Alice Blair will be presented immediately after the next...
We wish to call to your attention that Manhattan Mother, sponsored by the makers of Chipso, usually heard at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time, will be presented a half hour earlier at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, beginning Monday, September 25th. In a few minutes, we will take you to Washington for the proceedings at the historic special session of Congress. The President of the United States will address a joint session of Congress in person on the issue of the neutrality law. But first, here is the latest news from other parts of the world, news which occurred while Congress gathered into special session. Close attention is directed at Romania today. There, the premier, Arman Călinescu, has been assassinated. This led to reports that important developments, perhaps of a revolutionary nature, are underway in the Romanian capital, Bucharest. But up to this moment, there is nothing to bear out those reports. Filing its news under a Bucharest dateline, the United Press said that six youthful assassins shot and killed Premier Călinescu, who was a vigorous foe of the pro-Nazi Iron Guard. The killing took place while the premier was driving by automobile to the Royal Palace, where it was believed he was to have an interview with King Carol. The government of Romania, headed by Premier Călinescu, had suppressed the Iron Guard organization on charges of terrorism. The dispatch from Bucharest goes on. The assassins approached Călinescu's automobile from behind a parked car on the main street of Bucharest. The premier's automobile was blocked for the moment, either by accident or intentionally, by a large truck. The truck lumbered across the street, blocking a line of traffic. The premier's automobile slowed down. The six assassins leaped from their hiding place and ran toward it. One of them yanked open the door of the car. Then the shots were fired. Călinescu was taken to the nearby university hospital and pronounced dead. And a few seconds later, the Bucharest radio station interrupted a musical program and a voice shouted, "Călinescu is killed." And now the very latest word from Bucharest, filed just 9 minutes ago, said that two of the assassins of the premier committed suicide by shooting tonight in Bucharest when they were surrounded in a midtown store. Guards cut off their escape. There is no word yet about the other attackers. And a clear picture as to whether this is an isolated attack or the forerunner of other events is not available. Briefly now, the news of other capitals. London published a white paper in which it is stated that Germany answered Great Britain's ultimatum on September the 2nd, an ultimatum which, you remember, demanded withdrawal of Nazi troops from Poland with a threat to answer any aggressive action on the part of England with the same weapons and in the same form. Berlin said today that Soviet War Commissar Voroshilov may visit the German capital early in October to return the visit of a German military mission to Moscow. There is no confirmation from Russia about this so far. 5 announced today that all details of its general mobilization are complete, meaning that 6 million men are under arms and ready for their war duties. It was also stated that British preparations in France are proceeding on a large scale. The French said that Allied aircraft shot down 2 German planes and that Captain von Richthofen, son of the World War ace, had been killed. It is stated that 1/5 of the German submarine fleet at sea has been destroyed. Further unconfirmed reports say that the liner Bremen is in British hands. Fighting still goes on in Poland. By all indications, up to this moment, Warsaw still holds out under heavy siege, but still holds out at that. The polls say also that Lviv is holding out. And here in New York, stocks advanced fractions to 5 points in moderately active trading today, while bonds were mixed with 18 U.S. governments at new lows, and wheat gained 1¼ and 1½ cents a bushel. More news as it occurs. For word from our own capital, we take you now to Washington.
Washington, D.C., September 21st. The Congress of the United States convenes an extra session. This is John Charles Daly speaking from the House of Representatives. Called into this session by the President of the United States by a proclamation issued on September 13th, today at noon, the House of Representatives and the United States Senate met, organized, and recessed until 1:50 Eastern Standard Time, 2:50 Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Then the Senate and the House will convene in joint session to hear the President of the United States deliver his message reviewing the neutrality laws of the country. Columbia's microphones will be opened on the rostrum of the House to bring you the address of the President. In the meantime, as we await the arrival of the President, Albert Warner, Columbia's Washington news analyst, who is in the small library of the House, has several distinguished members of Congress whom he will interview. Albert Warner.
One of the congressmen we have here is Senator Austin, assistant minority leader of the Senate, who comes from rock-ribbed Republican Vermont. The senator was one of those invited to the president's conference yesterday on neutrality revision. Senator, can you tell us something about what you think is ahead in the session?
Mr. Warner, the preservation of American institutions and peace is the immediate objective. The means to be used is the question. My judgment is that repeal of the embargo, leaving our government independent to take any action that may be adapted to known conditions in the future, would be the most neutral act of government and therefore the least partial and the least provocative. Retention of the embargo is not regarded as impartial. It helps Germany. It deprives Britain and France of a lawful advantage they possess through geographical location and command of the seas. The distinction between neutrality and qualified neutrality ought to be regarded when we take our first step. Repeal of the embargo would place the government in a truly neutral attitude. Repeal of the embargo, accompanied by reenactment of the cash and carry provision, would place the government as such in an attitude of semi-neutrality. Only one step should now be taken. This is necessary for the record. This step should be entirely neutral and impartial. There is only one act within our contemplation which constitutes that step, and that is repeal of the Embargo Act of 1937. There we should stop for the present. There we would be under the rules of international law. These rules forbid the government participating for or against either side. These rules do not require the government to prohibit its nationals from commerce. Later, if the circumstances should require some further act by the government, which is not wholly impartial, such as reenacting the cash and carry provision covering both munitions and contraband of war, the government could take that step deliberately and candidly admit the fact that its act is not entirely impartial. Therefore, I prefer the first alternative. However, I seek information and guidance and am particularly concerned that Congress should act in accord with an enlightened public opinion because the vitality of our foreign policy depends upon the support of a united people. I have voluminous mail on this subject for which I am grateful. I shall try to answer each letter with a view to encouraging continued interest and expression by the American people. Finally, the country should feel reassured by the knowledge that, regardless of preferences respecting methods, we have a united Congress on the objective of peace.
Thank you, Senator Austin. Now, Representative Bruce Boughton, a Republican representing a district in the heart of Manhattan Island in New York City. You've just been on the floor, Mr. Boughton. Can you tell us what the atmosphere in the House is?
Well, I would say that the atmosphere in the House is profoundly serious and strikingly free from partisan thought or purpose. It seems to me that the members of Congress have come back to Washington with only one idea, and that is to arrive at an honorable and effective agreement which may save our people from the ravages and the heartbreak of another foreign war. I think no man who has the honor to occupy a seat in this Congress can fail to be impressed with the solemn character of this meeting. On September 3rd, less than 3 weeks ago, parliamentary government ceased to function in every great nation of the world with the single exception of the United States. The parliaments of England and France continue to convene, but only to register the decrees of what have now become virtually autocratic governments. No nation can successfully conduct a modern war without surrendering itself to autocracy. Thus, our Congress, meeting today, is the one last outpost of real representative government, the one free forum where men and women can express their convictions with no censorship. Nowhere else in the world is there left a national legislative body where the people can make their influence directly felt. That they are making it felt, that they propose to participate positively and continuously in the discussion, is indicated by the mail that is flooding our offices. So great was the volume this morning that delivery was delayed more than an hour. Across the oceans, the decisions of life and death for the masses of men and women are being made by small groups of men behind closed doors. Here in America, and only in America, the people, through their Congress, in free and open meeting, argue their convictions and arrive finally at the united policy which becomes law.
The Senate has just entered the House chamber. Now we'll have a word from Senator Burns, a Democratic leader from South Carolina.
This Congress has been called not to consider the question of whether this government will go to war, but to consider neutrality legislation. I know of no man in public life holding responsible position who is not sincerely anxious to have the United States keep out of war. The question is how best to accomplish this objective. I favor the repeal of the embargo provision. I think that the people of America should have the right to sell the products of our farms and factories to Germany, Great Britain, or any other government, provided they pay cash and carry home their purchases. I believe that in considering neutrality legislation, the Congress will approach it in an entirely nonpartisan manner. You can rest assured the Congress is actuated only by a desire to promote the best interest of the American people and keep this nation out of war.
Thank you, Senator Burns. And now, as the President is expected here in a few minutes, may I turn this over to Charles Daly.
Here is what's been happening in the House of Representatives while Mr. Warner was interviewing the celebrities from the two houses of Congress at approximately 1:55. Speaker Bankhead called the House to order, and then the Senate, preceded by Vice President Garner, the Secretary and Sergeant of Arms, entered the chamber. Now the Speaker Bankhead and Vice President Garner are seated together on the Speaker's platform of the rostrum, and in a moment they will appoint committees to go out of the House to conduct the President into the chamber. Speaker Bankhead and Vice President Garner are consulting now relative to the appointment of the committees, and the members of the Senate are taking their seats. The floor of the House is, as usual, the ordered excitement that one expects in a joint session of the Congress, for the Senate will take up the first three rows of the regular House-assigned seats, and then the House members are moved back and extra chairs put in back of the circular rows of seats that ordinarily suffice for the members of the House. Shortly, the President's cabinet will be inducted into the chamber itself by Mr. Sinnott, the House doorkeeper, and they will take their seats at the foot of the rostrum, the dais from which the President will speak. The senators are still filing into the House of Representatives and taking their proper places, and Senator Austin, who has just spoken to you, I can see now taking his seat. Senator Bankhead is in the process of naming committees.
Gentleman from North Carolina, Mr. Dowden. Gentleman from Massachusetts, Mr. Martin.
The Senate committee will be Mr. Barkley of Kentucky, Pittman of Nevada, Mr. McNary of Oregon.
Vice President Garner, as you just heard, named the two committees that will go out and conduct the President of the United States into the House chamber so that he may make his address. In just a moment now, the doorkeeper, Mr. Sinnott, will announce the President's cabinet, and they will file in and take their places in a row of armchairs that, as I have told you, been placed at the foot of the regular line of seats. Now, Speaker Bankhead, I think, will make the announcement of the President's cabinet's entrance into the House chamber. Speaker Bankhead and Mr. Garner are consulting, I believe, on the order and precedence of this day. Now the members of the President's cabinet are coming into the House from one of the front doors beside the rostrum rather than the center door to which they're usually inducted. I can see Postmaster General Farley, Secretary of State Cordell Hull, Secretary Wallace of Agriculture,